more than two dozen tentative agreements on a variety of issues, but have failed to produce an agreement on raises. For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
A toda mi gente escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, December 20th, 2024. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show, and of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Brazil, as last month, Brazil's federal police force recommended criminal charges against far-right former President Jair Bolsonaro for attempting a coup as he attempted to cling to power in the wake of the 2022 presidential elections in Brazil. In addition, CNN Brazil reported Bolsonaro had, quote, full knowledge of a plot to assassinate then-president-elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Five people, including a former advisor to Bolsonaro, were arrested over the alleged conspiracy. The plot also included plans to assassinate Vice President Geraldo Alckmin and Alexandre de Moraes, president of the Superior Electoral Court at the time. All of these allegations have also come in the middle of congressional discussions concerning amnesty for those involved in a January 8th insurrection of 2023 in Brasilia. And so with us on the show today is our guest, Olavo Passos de Sousa. He's a doctoral student in history at Stanford University in California. His recent article in Jacobin is entitled, Jair Bolsonaro Has Been Implicated in a Plot to Murder Lula. He joins us on the show for the first time. Welcome to the show, Olavo Passos de Sousa.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Walter.
So, as I said from the title, this is a very compelling conversation and some very serious charges that need some contextualization. But before we do that, I just want to give a programming note for everyone listening on today's show that we are also in the middle of WPFW's end of the year pledge drive, which gives you the opportunity to support the Latino Media Collective by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. So Olavo, as I mentioned in the introduction, there are a series of events that happen almost all at once that necessitates some context into former President Jair Bolsonaro's administration and the circumstances that led to the coup plot that I mentioned at the introduction. Without leading the witness here, some of this contextualization may include some things Americans may already be familiar with, like claims of a rigged election and an attempted insurrection. But there are other things, like an attempted assassination plot, which is new, if not shocking, altogether. So we were corresponding in our email before we started this discussion. How do we begin to contextualize the previous Bolsonaro administration that led to the coup attempt in 2023? There's a lot to unpack here, but it only makes sense that we go to the beginning.
Yes, the beginning really ties to the international sense, the international community, in the way that the far right across the world really has been growing in power and growing more authoritarian and growing more prominent. And that was true in Brazil, that's true in other places. And you do see similarities, as you pointed out, when it comes to claims of rigged election and insurrections happening in January. And the similarities really pushed me to attempt to try to investigate and write about these events that have really been marking the democratic process across the world. So Brazil has faced, historically, to give you context, had a long dictatorship throughout the 20th century, from 1964 to 1985. This dictatorship remains a part of the national memory in Brazil. It's still very prevalent within the political mindset of many. The right supports it in many ways, the left condemns it. And since the end of the dictatorship in 1985, there had been this consensus in Brazil between the left and the right that was a democratic opposition. You had the left, the right, but they both were in favor of democracy. That started to change slowly with the rise of figures such as Bolsonaro, which is a vehement defender of the dictatorship and a great supporter of the military. So there is this ever-present fear of the military in Brazil that something may be re-sparked. And Bolsonaro's government, to oversimplify things, was incredibly prevalent and subservient to the military and brought them back into the fold of politics. So leading up to the elections in 2022, which is when these events took place mostly, and also in the January 8th of 2023, Bolsonaro really was afraid of losing the election. The polls were showing that he was on the threat of losing the election. And so slowly a plot communication started between him and members of his cabinet and members of the military to try to first prevent Lula's victory by any way possible, and then to prevent him from taking power, which would be on January 1st of 2023. So the context in Brazil is that the military has this presence in society that really the United States, you don't see it. Maybe, hopefully, you will continue not to see it. And the events that led to 2023, to the coup attempt, really show that it is an ever-present fear in Brazil. So that's really the context that one must understand.
And the manner in which you contextualize Brazil's democracy or the fragility of it is very consistent with a lot of other guests that we've had in the past with regards to the threat of democracy in Brazil, whether it be by Bolsonaro in particular, the individual, or the Brazilian right wing as a whole, because almost every Brazilian guest have all said, independent of one another, the fragility of Brazilian democracy and the fact that the dictatorship that you mentioned is not in the faraway past, like almost a century ago. This is almost less than 40 years ago. And so it speaks to the fragility of democracy in Brazil and why people have been so concerned over recent events, not just from Bolsonaro the individual, but those who follow him as well. So To explain the scope of the charges, the recent charges against Bolsonaro, allow me to quote you in your Jacobin article with the following. You said, quote, although they had some support from army officers, the plotters could not count upon the unified backing of the military, and nothing came of their plans before the elections. Following Bolsonaro's defeat, the figures surrounding the outgoing president developed a greater sense of urgency about a coup to be mounted before Lula's inauguration on January 1st of 2023, end quote. So I bring this quote up as an opportunity to perhaps give you the opportunity to explain what is or what was Plano Puñal Verde Amarelo. For those who may not know, this is something that I saw in your article that left me quite shocked. That not only was there a plot, but there was a name for it, and it was all under the veil of patriotism and nationalism. It's quite shocking, and it's quite, I would say, Orwellian as well when I read the details here.
Yes, for Puñal Verde Amarelo, the green yellow dagger, it is the culmination of the fears that many had about this attempted coup. And really is the latest revelation that came of a very slow, gradual, but certain investigation that has been taking place ever since the coup attempt in December and 2022 and January 2023. And what the Green Yellow Dagger plan is, Puñal Verde Amarelo is, was a plot to assassinate President-elect Lula, Vice President-elect Geraldo Alckmin, and the former President of the Supreme Electoral Court, Alexandre de Moraes. These were, and still are, to the right and to the far right in Brazil, the arch enemies, the threat to them. And so they were seen then by members of the plots of Bolsonaro's cadre, cabal of supporters, so I could say, as the main targets. This is an operation that received money, was financed, and the investigators right now are trying to target exactly to find out where that money came from. That's the big question. That's the billion-dollar question, as one would say, to carry out the assassination. And it nearly went out. They fought, they tried to plant something regarding explosives, biological weapons. They tried to kidnap Alexandre de Moraes, as the revelations came about. However, his session went a little too long, and so it ended a bit early, I believe. And so they gave up, and so they aborted the plan. But they came this close to kidnapping the chief jurist in Brazil, essentially, the most important figure of the judiciary. And what really is this plan, it is the latest revelation. Because to understand it, and how much of a shock, how much of an insane shock it was to Brazilian society when that came out. The plot, the coup attempt happens in December of 2022. In January 8th of 2023, there is an event in Brazil that very much resembles January 6th in the United States. A mob attacked the Brasilia, the center of the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative. They defaced buildings, they destroyed windows, they invaded and stormed the buildings. And by then, at first glance, it felt just like that. It felt like a massive, manifestation, a mob, a riot. Eventually, revelations came about that there was more to that. It wasn't a case of negligence with the officers, but that the officers in charge of the security in Brasilia were complicit with this mob of Bolsonaro supporters. Months later came revelations of a plot, a coup planned, when a written plot for a coup was found in the house of a politician in Brasilia. And that came in June. And so now, people understood finally that there was indeed a plot for a coup. Then the revelations continued to pile up. And finally now, 2 years later, we realized there was not simply a plan for a coup. There was not simply, consideration talks, but there was an active ongoing assassination plot to murder the elected, were correctly elected leaders of Brazil by that point. So Brazil was in shock when these revelations came about recently in November, and the effects of it are still being felt all the way to the present day, Saturday. I, for example, if I can give you an anecdote about that, I live very close to the Naval Academy here in Rio, by the bay. And on Saturday, General Braga Neto was arrested.
Was
finally arrested. And on that day, what you could see from the window was a number of warships on the bay, and you could see cannon fire, ceremonial cannon fire, from the Naval Academy. So what was that? What essentially does that mean? That can be a homage to the general by the Navy, saying, you know, we support him when this is happening. This can also be perceived as a threat by the military, by the Navy, saying, we are still here, we are still present. We are noticing things. Because this is the first time in Brazilian history that a four-star general is arrested. Following the military dictatorship in Brazil, we do not have arrests for generals. There was a general amnesty for the military. We never really had such repercussion for the military. This is what the democratic government of Lula is trying to change right now. It's trying to hold those responsible for the 2022 coup accountable. And the military is ever present and watching and worried and taking precautions. So they are watching.
Wow.
Yes, it is, and still very much an ongoing event in Brazil. So the threat of a coup, we'll say, is diminished right now, because many of the figures on the operations of the military have been either removed, replaced over time. Many have been arrested. But it never in Brazil, the threat of a dictatorship is never null and void.
Okay, I was shocked enough by what you wrote in your Jacobin article. Now that you giving me these extra details, I'm almost speechless here that the military reacted that way over the weekend. My goodness. I mean, I read of a threat. I didn't necessarily had it painted in my head it would be in that manner, which goes to show you that what we said at the beginning of the show, which is the fragility of Brazilian democracy, is something not only problematic to Brazilians as a whole, but also to all of South America as well, to the whole region. That is quite shocking that the military reacted that way because of one general being arrested over something that, you know, based on your article, the right wing and the Bolsonaro supporters are not denying. You mentioned in your article Flavio Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro's son, who's currently in Congress. I think I had the direct quote here that he said something to the effect that, quote, talking about killing is not a crime. Well, there is a word for that. It's called conspiracy in the United States, and it's also called a conspiracy in Brazil as well. So it's quite amazing that not only has this plot been publicized, but those supporters are not denying it at all, which just goes to show you their contempt for democracy, the fragility of Brazilian institutions as far as democracy is concerned. And it kind of reminds me of the era after the Argentinian dictatorship around 85 or 86, when the military was threatening to take over the country again. There's a fantastic book called Masters of War by Clara Nieto. And during this time period, she referred to the Argentinian military as, quote, an aristocracy by social origin, meaning that they are not just a product of the aristocracy or a creation of the aristocracy, but they have become an aristocracy unto themselves, an armed and dangerous one as well. So we're going to continue this conversation here, but I want to take this moment right now that because we are in the middle of an end-of-year holiday pledge drive here on WPFW, I want to remind the audience, if you want to continue to hear these compelling stories and have fantastic guests like Olavo Passos de Sousa on the show with us, take the opportunity right now to support and pledge some financial support to WPFW and the Latino Media Collective at this time by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. If you want to continue to hear some compelling stories like this, like what Olavo's just mentioned. And Olavo, I want to take this opportunity to point out something that you sort of indirectly mentioned. It wasn't in your article, but looking back in hindsight now, considering what we know now about this plot to assassinate Lula and kidnap some other political leaders in Brazil, even before the January 8th insurrection in 2023, which we have to say that it's almost like a mirror image of what happened here in the U.S. in 2021 in January 6th. There's no ambiguity about it. It's the same thing. One is motivated by the other. So we have to be clear about that. But even before the January 8th insurrection in Brazil in 2023, there were multiple reports of Bolsonaro supporters, including truckers, blocking in traffic as Bolsonaro refused to formally acknowledge the election results in November of 2022. You have to keep these dates important. Even CBS News reported in November of 2022 that there were fears that Bolsonaro might attempt a January 6th Capitol riots of 2021. So people were predicting this almost 2 or 3 months before it actually happened, the January 8th insurrection in Brasilia. And so I bring this up because where do these events fit into what was recently discovered, which included a plot to kidnap Alexandre de Moraes, as you just mentioned, who's the president of the Superior Electoral Court at the time. And let's not also forget that the World Cup was happening around the same time in November and December of 2022. So needless to say, people were distracted. And so the possibility of doing such a thing could have happened while everyone was distracted in Brazil.
Yes, Brazil, you can see many similarities to the American sense in regards to fake news and in regards to disinformation. There was an immediate rejection of the election by many of the right, many within the right. And what is interesting in Brazil is because the polls showed Lula winning long before the election. The polls also supported Lula. So what Bolsonaro tried to do was discredit the elections well beforehand. So by the time they came around, it was already very clear in 2022 that he would not accept results, unless, of course, he won. And what happened is that Bolsonaro lost. They were very close elections. But immediately there was a movement to attempt to prevent any change, to attempt to revert that. And it was an incredibly disorganized, informal, many could call it grassroots movement of Bolsonaro supporters, of right-wing supporters. You mentioned the truckers, who absolutely tried to paralyze Brazil and did succeed in cutting the flux of trade within many of the states of Brazil, of goods. States more to the interior were more prone to Bolsonaro. They were a big movement in Brazil. And there was, when I say grassroots, I mean it's supported by the masses, by the people, but there was coordination with Bolsonaro supporting politicians from the right, wealthy businessmen who we are discovering more and more as the investigations go, just as revelations are coming in, were deeply invested in this plot and supporting finance and supporting logistics, such as buses that can carry people to protest and to Brasilia, for example. So there was outright rejection by the right of the 2022 election. And you brought something up, which I think I have to go back to and talk a little bit more. When you brought up Argentina and you brought up the military dictatorship in Argentina, which I want to mention that, yes, in Brazil, we often compare the situation in Brazil to that of Argentina in the sense that in Argentina, there was no general amnesty for the military when the dictatorship fell. So there was a sense of punishment. In Brazil, that didn't really occur. In Brazil, there was a general amnesty. To many in Brazil, there was not really a resolution to the dictatorship. The right that supports the dictatorship continues to see itself as having been really mischaracterized and victimized. And the left believes that there was a punishment that never really came and accountability that never really came. And because that never really came, there is a specter of the military over us. So when I was talking before about the spheres of the dictatorship, I don't think anything is boiling over now, but it exists. And in regards to the election, you know, of 2022, the spread of fake news in the United States might be, the word fake news might seem as a bit of an outdated term, has been used for many years, and it might have fallen out of vogue so much. But in Brazil, it's still very much present, the idea of fake news. The spread of disinformation was really vital for Bolsonaro and his supporters. In Brazil, we use WhatsApp, which is the most popular form of communication in Brazil. So that was the avenue through which people got information, got news. Fake news being spread through that was essential to mobilize these grassroots right-wing manifestations that we were talking about to prevent the election, really.
And see, this is why it's so important that people support independent media outlets like WPFW, because I'm glad that you mentioned the issue of fake news, because next month on the show, we are going to dedicate on the anniversary of the January 8th insurrection in Brazil of 2023. We're going to dedicate an entire show on the issue of fake news and misinformation in Brazil. I know that Elon Musk, in relation to Brazil, has been in the news quite a lot lately. And it just goes to show you why independent media outlets like WPFW are so important to give platforms to fantastic guests like Olavo Passos de Sousa to give us a more nuanced understanding of the fragility of Brazilian democracy as it stands right now and this shocking revelation of a coup plot to assassinate the current president of Brazil. And let's make no mistake about it, there are quite a lot of parallels here between what took place in the U.S. in 2021 and what took place in Brazil in 2023, not just in terms of right-wing support, not just in terms of fake news and misinformation, as Olavo mentioned, even some American individuals who have been supportive of what took place in the U.S. in 2021, the January 6th insurrection, have also had maybe their fingertips on what took place in Brazil in 2023. I'm speaking specifically about Steve Bannon, who you mentioned in your article, Olavo, and even Jason Miller, who even now at this present point in time still remains a confidant of Trump the individual and the Trump administration. And so, again, you need to support independent media outlets like WPFW so we can continue to have fantastic guests like Olavo Passos de Sousa on the show. And so in order to do that, you need to support us at this hour by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation, or you can go to the Cash App on your phone and make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. We're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Olavo Passos de Sousa, who's a doctoral student in history at Stanford University in California. His recent article in Jacobin is entitled "Jair Bolsonaro Has Been Implicated in a Plot to Murder Lula." This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
soldados armados, armados ou não, quase todos perdidos, de armas na mão, nos quartéis lhes ensino uma antiga lição de morrer pela pátria e viver sem razão.
Geraldo Vandre, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone that we are in the middle of WPFW's end of year holiday pledge drive. So right now is your opportunity to support the Latino Media Collective at this hour by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. Because the importance of supporting independent media outlets at this time in not only U.S. history, but in Latin American history is so crucial, especially when the shadow of misinformation and fake news can lead to things like what we've discussed thus far in terms of an insurrection and how right-wing support is sort of being fueled by misinformation and fake news in places like Twitter. And like I said before, we're going to dedicate an entire hour show next month to focus on the issue of disinformation. Not only that, in outlets like Twitter, but also on Facebook as well, and how corporate control of these outlets have increased the amount of fake news and disinformation. It's a nuanced conversation that requires a fantastic guest on the show, but it's only possible if you support independent media outlets like WPFW. And so let's continue our conversation with Olavo Pasos de Sousa, who is a doctoral student in history at Stanford University in California. His recent article in Jacobin is entitled Jair Bolsonaro Has Been Implicated in a Plot to Murder Lula. So I hate to put you on the spot here, Olavo, but like I said before, Elon Musk has been in the news lately in terms of his business dealings in Brazil. There's been a time, most of the year actually, 2024, where Twitter, also known as X, has been banned in Brazil because he failed to follow certain guidelines with regards to information and other business guidelines that are in Brazil. And it's quite fascinating to me because there are certain restrictions in Brazil with regards to information and news that we don't have here in the U.S. at all. And so, again, I hate to put you on the spot because this wasn't mentioned in your Jacobin article, but how would you measure the issue of misinformation? You sort of mentioned it indirectly already, but how would you measure this recent issue with Elon Musk to what we discussed thus far with the January 8th insurrection of 2023 in Brazil, and also the support that seems to be fomented for Bolsonaro by outlets like Twitter.
Yes, Twitter is one of the main sources of communication used in Brazil by people, as is WhatsApp and many others. And they have been very much present in the news. And the case of Elon Musk has been on everyone's mind when it was taking place a couple of ago. These standoffs between Elon Musk and the Brazilian judiciary, really. Because the issue of fake news and disinformation has taken such a front position within the dock when Brazil sees the coup plot, sees the coup attempt, the judiciary really is cracking down on disinformation and fake news. You mentioned the differences between Brazil and the U.S. Yes, in Brazil, we have safeguards. The judiciary tries to implement safeguards against hate speech and against disinformation. It is not, as one considers, universal the freedom of speech as it is in the U.S. And so the judiciary tries to combat disinformation and hate speech, which is reportedly more and more present in sources such as Twitter. So the standoff between Elon Musk and the Brazilian judiciary was simply because in Brazil, by the law, and the Twitter must, by Brazilian law, have representatives in Brazil. A company that is operating within Brazil must have representatives within Brazil. Elon Musk had tried to shift that narrative to become something regarding freedom of speech, about how the Brazilian judiciary was trying to shut them down because of personal views that might be shared on Twitter against the Brazilian government. But the position of the judiciary was simply that if Elon Musk did not comply and play representatives from the company within Brazil, have someone, some intermediary, then it would be shut down. I do not believe it was shut down. I believe it might have been suspended for a short amount of time. But eventually, Twitter, X, whatever we may call it, backed down and agreed to a negotiation. So it really is a matter of narrative, because to Twitter, it is, and the narrative is all about free speech and censorship. And to the Brazilian judiciary, it is about accountability for these companies and making sure that these companies operate within the parameters of the law. So people migrated from Twitter to other platforms in Brazil to some scale. I do not know how prevalent that was. I believe many people are still on Twitter. But yes, the issue of fake news and disinformation and all remains really a hotspot within the Brazilian political discourse. The Brazilian right continues to claim again and again that it's being censored, that it's being persecuted, that its ability to speak is being shut down. And members of the judiciary claim that it is simply a matter of preserving the stability of Brazilian democracy, because they do see disinformation as being a threat to the stability of democracy, something that has been shown to be true with the events that led to the coup attempt and insurrection in 2023, when mass information led to violence.
Yeah, you know what? This is an interesting component that we just added to our conversation today, because we've been mentioning Brazilian democracy as being fragile, but at the same time, these safeguards and regulations seem like the type of thing that I wish we had here in the United States when it comes to fake news and disinformation, because while it may be problematic in Brazil, as I just said, there's a structure that could regulate it. Here in the U.S., I would argue that misinformation and fake news is so out of control in this country that it's led to the election results here in the U.S. that we've seen, not just this year, but for several years now. And so while we say that Brazil's democracy may be fragile, it's certainly stronger in this component. And it's something that I could only wish that we had here in the United States. Now, another interesting thing in your article is that while all of these allegations are unfolding, your Jacobin article actually begins by discussing last month's G20 summit. So at first glance, the G20 summit on global poverty and climate change versus allegations of a murder plot seem to be two separate subjects altogether that deserve a one-hour conversation for each one to get a nuanced understanding of each one. So what parallels are there between the two events that compelled you to put those two issues together into one article here? Because again, you started discussing the G20 summit, and then the real heart of the issue was the murder plot. So what are the parallels here that compelled you to put those two issues together?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. There really is two point for that. The first is simply a question of timing, because the revelations about the murder plot and the official indictment came about during the G20 summit, so which was a huge event in Brazil. It was really mobilizing people in Rio. Rio was fully prepared to receive these world leaders. Lula was there. They were all there. And suddenly, the news cycle turns away from these massive events to these revelations, which came about on Monday, the same day that the summit was taking place. So I begin the article talking about that, particularly because there are two monumental events that happened really at the same time. And the second point is because the G20 feature world leaders from all sorts and all sides of the political spectrum. And what we see more and more is figures within the authoritarian right, authoritarian figures, figures that will oppose the idea of democracy in a way that maybe the right didn't a short while ago, a few decades ago. And so the response that countries have to these attacks on democracy, the chic is essential to keep a watch on. So in Brazil, there was this unique response, which was to persecute it from the beginning. When the coup happened, when the coup attempt happened, when the insurrection happened, Lula's government, the judiciary, and federal police all began to investigate it, all carry out immediate arrests of individuals responsible. And you can parallel that with things that might have happened or not happened in other places around the world, such as what happened on January 6th. Maybe perhaps a lack of response, a lack of accountability for events. And so the reason I parallel the G20, where all kinds of world leaders are showing up with these revelations, was to show that within Brazil, there is a pursuit of accountability. There is this ongoing pursuit of justice and a defense of democracy, which is ideally something that should be mimicked by other nations and pursued ideally by all nations. But that is not always the case. So really, that's why I parallel both events. And as you said before, yeah, the G20 was an event that truly deserves its own time, its own discussion, because it covered the issues of hunger, it covered the issues of war, and really the different positions that maybe the Global South and the Global North have on where the world should be heading towards. But that's a cool persistence for a different time.
Yeah, it's a conversation that leads to a Pandora's box that needs a more nuanced conversation. But I do recognize now the parallels that you made there. So thank you for clarifying that. Now, it should come as no surprise that the Brazilian right wing has denied or downplayed any wrongdoing or criminality by Jair Bolsonaro. However, in your article, one of Bolsonaro's last acts as president was to flee to Florida. In December of 2022, a month before the January 8th insurrection in 2023. Could you explain how fleeing the country not once, but possibly twice, tells you about his ties to authoritarians abroad? Because he could have gone to any other place in the United States to flee Brazil, possibly because of the threat of arrest, but he chose Florida, which has various right-wing expat communities from various countries in Latin America. And when I said twice, what I actually meant to say is that he tried to go to the Hungarian embassy to try to get some degree of asylum or something like that, some help from the authoritarian Hungarian president, Viktor Orban. So what does that tell you about his ties to authoritarianism here, which since that was one of his last acts?
Yes, Florida is home to a very large Brazilian community, many of them more on the conservative end of the spectrum. And it is a very popular destination for people that want to visit the United States from Brazil. It is a very appropriate place for Bolsonaro to flee to where he lives, in the sense that not only is it locally conservative and features a more conservative range of Brazilian immigrants, but it is really what people in Brazil imagine the United States to be in many ways. And there is a degree of vira-latismo on that, which is a Brazilian term, which regards, you know, admiration, kind of self-loathing and admiration for the other, and particularly for the United States. And so Bolsonaro fleeing there makes sense politically for him because of the political conditions of the state of Florida. Makes sense in regards to the population there. And was to many Brazilians a clear sign that he was terrified of what would happen now that he no longer had immunity, that he now could be held accountable for his actions, now that he did not have presidential immunity. It is also a sign of how bound together and united many within the right are internationally. And it's not a local problem for Brazil. And it's not a local problem for the United States. It is not a local problem for those in Europe or anywhere else. The right really operates internationally. There is a network of communication there. So the second time that it happened came about when, as you mentioned, he sought asylum within the Hungarian embassy. It was leaked CCTV footage, I believe, by the New York Times or some newspaper that found out that he spent 2 days there on the Hungarian embassy as he was close friends with Prime Minister Viktor Orban all during his time as president of Brazil. So, and Viktor Orban being another figure of this international right, you know, it really gives you a hint of why he sought asylum from the consulate of Hungary and not anywhere else. So Bolsonaro has given clear hints that he will try to avoid arrest, he will try to avoid persecution if it came to happen, came to pass. And the Brazilian justice came down on that. Now he was forced to surrender his passport. And now he had been arrested, he has been indicted. So the consequences for Bolsonaro, we are yet to see. But what it is clear from his multiple escape attempts is that he is not confident in his defense when these indictments turn into an actual prosecution.
Yeah, that's a very important thing to point out, that this is still an ongoing developing story, even as we have this conversation today. But the fact that he fled to Florida back in 2022, a month before the insurrection, sort of, let's just say it, it's sort of a mission of guilt, not only once, but twice, to try to get some help from Viktor Orban. And like I said earlier, it's not like his supporters are denying any of the actions or any of the criminality. Like I said before, Flavio, his son, said that there's nothing wrong with talking about murdering somebody.
The amount of evidence really is astounding. Not only do we have what we call in Brazil delação premiada, which basically is when one individual confesses, it's a sort of plea deal. They confess for immunity. It was used very much during corruption investigations in the Brazilian past in the last decade, when a politician would basically rat out a different politician and so on, and that cycle would continue. And now it's been essential to uncovering the events of the coup. And not only this testimony, but also paper proof, paper evidence that was left. What was found was, in multiple cases, paper evidence of a conspiracy and a communication about not only about the coup, but about the murder plots. And so the evidence is astounding. And for that reason, the Brazilian right really has pivoted away from saying that it didn't happen, that there was no plot, that there was no talk, that there was no communication or conspiracy, and to say that, there was, but it really is no crime to talk. It really is no crime to hypothesize. It really is no crime to imagine things. It really is an appeal, a last resort in many ways. And what is important to remember is that the Brazilian right really does foresee this entire investigation as being a persecution of them. And they do see themselves as victims in many ways. Those that were arrested in the insurrection of January 8th, they perceive as being political prisoners. They perceive as being targets of unjust arrest.
Just like the U.S.
Yes, indeed. They perceived it to have been a peaceful protest, a peaceful manifestation, and that those that were arrested were simply political prisoners being arrested by a illegal and oppressive judiciary. When in reality, what is happening is that they were arrested for an insurrection. And the arrests continue following a very lengthy investigation. There has been nothing has been rushed in this long investigation. That's why the arrests are happening now, late December 2024, not when the events first happened. So there really is this sentiment of persecution among the right, and it ties to their defense of, well, we were just exercising our free speech. Conveniently forgetting the conspiracy is a crime just in Brazil as it is in the U.S.
Yeah. As we said before, there are a lot of similarities between the insurrection in Brazil in 2023 and what we saw here in the U.S. in 2021. The most important difference, though, is that one came before the other, And so therefore, one was inspired by the original. And so, again, a lot of parallels between this, what we've been discussing, and what we saw here in the U.S. 3 years ago. The only difference is that while we've mentioned Brazil's democracy as being fragile, they've had some safeguards and have also taken some initiatives that only we could wish could happen here in the U.S. And so, as I said before, this is a developing story that's going to continue to develop in the weeks and months ahead. We are certainly going to do our part here in the Latino Media Collective to cover this story as it continues to develop. And we're going to continue to try to have fantastic guests like Olavo Pasos de Sousa on the show. But it's only possible with your support of independent media outlets like WPFW. So again, we encourage everyone to go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation, or go to the Cash App on your phone and make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so, so we can continue to have fantastic guests like Olavo Pasos de Sousa, who's a doctoral student in history at Stanford University in California. His recent article in Jacobin is entitled, "Jair Bolsonaro Has Been Implicated in a Plot to Murder Lula." And we're going to create a link to his article on our Twitter account so people can learn more. But in the meantime, thank you for your insights and information. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show with us, Olavo Pasos de Sousa.
Thank you for having me, Oscar. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone that we are in the middle of WPFW's holiday place drive. So go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation, or go to the Cash App on your phone and make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to Latino Media Collective when you do so. And in the meantime, you can also go to LatinoMediaCollective.com to check out this episode and our previous episodes as well. And so with that said, that is it for today's show. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening and supporting independent media. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. GOP lawmakers indicated that the House could vote on another continuing resolution today to avert the looming partial government shutdown at midnight, but the timing still remains unclear. The House last night rejected a plan supported by Donald Trump to avert a government shutdown. The final vote included 38 Republicans who opposed it, largely because, at Trump's request, the plan included a 2-year suspension of the debt ceiling. Reportedly, in a last-minute bid to avert the shutdown, House GOP leaders are now eyeing a strategy that would allow lawmakers to take separate votes on funding the government and raising the debt limit. GOP members are expected to meet this afternoon to discuss the latest proposal, according to lawmakers and aides. Meanwhile, Donald Trump insisted that it is President Joe Biden who should be held responsible for any shutdown, stating on Truth Social, quote, "If there is going to be a shutdown of government, let it begin now under the Biden administration, not after January 20th under Trump," close quote. Based on past government estimates, some 3.5 million federal workers could go without paychecks until an agreement is passed. Many of them, like airport security officers, will be required to show up to work and not get paid. Others could be told to stay home and not work. In related news, a prior bipartisan deal to fund the government failed earlier this week after Trump and Elon Musk, the world's richest person, came out against it, which is sparking alarm over the outsized influence of Musk on the political process. After the initial bipartisan agreement on a stopgap plan was reached on Wednesday, Musk used social media to post online a flood of misinformation about the deal, and he called it criminal. Reacting to Congress's failure to pass that measure, Senator Bernie Sanders said on X, quote, "Are Republicans beholden to the American people or President Musk?" close quote. Representative Pramila Jayapal said on X, quote, "It's clear who's in charge, and it's not President-elect Donald Trump," close quote. And Representative Jamie Raskin told C-SPAN, quote, "Everyone agreed, and then it was blown up by Elon Musk, who apparently has become the fourth branch of government, and that's just an intolerable way of proceeding under representative democracy," close quote. Elon Musk donated at least $250 million to help re-elect Donald Trump and has since been named to lead Trump's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. In other news, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau today sued the operator of the Zelle payments network and the three U.S. banks that dominate transactions on it, alleging that the firms failed to properly investigate fraud complaints or give victims reimbursement. The CFPB said customers of the three banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, have lost more than $870 million since the launch of Zelle in 2017. Zelle is a peer-to-peer payments network. It allows for instant payments to other consumers and businesses and has quickly surged to become the biggest such service in the country. CFPB Director Rohit Chopra.